Hello, Lifebookers from around the world, and thank you for tuning into the Lifebook Member Podcast today for Quality of Life Month, November 2020. I'm loving this exploration of quality of life, one of my favorite categories. We have the founder of Lifebook on the line, John Butcher. How's it going, man?
It's going great, Jordan. Nice to be here.
Quality of life.
Yeah.
We know we say it all adds up to the life vision category, but in a way, it kind of all adds up to the quality of life category, does it not?
Well, you know, I feel like that, Jordan. This has always been, well, I say this, you know me, I'm ridiculous. I say every category that I'm into is my favorite one, but truthfully, quality of life to me is what it all adds up to, because all the work we do in these categories to get our health and fitness dialed in, to get our financial life and our love relationship, this process, the Lifebook process, bringing consciousness to the most important areas of your life and really trying to dial them in, at the end of the day, it's all about quality of life. That's what we're doing. We're making the best possible quality of life that we can. Mm-hmm. So to me, this is kind of like, this is the reward at the end of the day for doing all this work. You get to live an awesome quality of life.
Yeah, man. How you spend your days, that's kind of what we're envisioning
when
we go through the vision of each category. So I really, really like this exploration. And we are going through the highest leverage strategies that you can implement to improve your quality of life, to expand your domain in your quality of life, and to better master the category known as quality of life.
Exactly.
So let's jump right in, shall we, man?
Yeah, let's do it.
So we were talking about this idea of kind of categorizing, I guess you could say, compartmentalizing your hours, your activities, your behaviors into kind of two different categories, those that are pleasant overall and those that are unpleasant. Talk to me about that.
You know, Jordan, to me, it's not about doing things that are pleasant versus doing things that are unpleasant. It's about doing things that create pleasantness in your life versus doing things that create unpleasantness in your life.
Mm.
For instance, some days I don't feel like working out. My workout is not necessarily pleasant.
Good point.
But the feelings that I get after I'm done are very pleasant. I'm happy with myself. I have higher self-esteem. My body feels better. Treating people with love versus treating people, you know, you're in a bad mood and you're snapping at people, that's going to end up creating pleasantness or unpleasantness that evening, mm-hmm. how you treat people. So, and I, by the way, I got this from Sadhguru. Sadhguru, just his basic thing is, look, we're here on this planet to enjoy our lives. And the manifestation of that is that you live in a pleasant state most of the time. You know you're doing pretty well in life if most of your time is spent in a nice, pleasant state versus, dude, look around you at how much angst there is in the world.
Mm-hmm.
How many people spend most of their life in an unpleasant, agitated, stressful state? I'm not interested in that. So, like, one of my biggest focuses is, how can I make sure that my behaviors, my words, my actions, even my thoughts lead to a pleasant life versus an unpleasant life? That's all I meant by that.
I really appreciate that. And it's a very specific choice of words. And not everything you do, like you said, you're going to have responsibilities, you're going to have things that you really don't want to do, but just overall having this idea of pleasantness and unpleasantness. Talk about things putting things into your brain. We don't give any credence to how much of that is pleasant and how much of that is unpleasant. You know what I mean?
Oh, dude, I've really, over the last few years, I've really started to understand at a much deeper level how important the quality of information that you put into your head is. On the internet, you can go anywhere you want to go. There's some really sick, crazy on the internet, right? That you can absorb into your mind, and then it's in your mind, and what are you going to do with that, right? And there's some wonderful stuff on the internet, some profound transformative stuff. So, you know, I call it mind guard, Jordan. And a few years ago, I put a mind guard strategy in my life. I'm like, I am not going to consume demented information. I'm not. And, you know, I think human beings have like this macabre side to them. They've got a fascination with, you know, that kind of crazy dark, we're like attracted to it somehow. But the internet allows you to go deep there if you want to. And that is a road that leads to, that's a road that leads to bad feelings.
That's so true.
So I put a mind guard strategy in place.
It's funny. I want to go into the specific topic. I even saw someone talking about this in the Facebook group. I think some people are naturally more inclined to that dark side. And I think that they may actually, you know, serve, maybe there's some sort of genetic societal purpose to that. We need, you know, gravekeepers and we need coroners. Like, I think that, but you have to decide if that is healthy or unhealthy. Like, that really has to be a decision that you make. And someone like me, I'm highly, highly sensitive to.
Yeah, you are. You would not do well absorbing dark information all the time. That would be bad for you.
Right.
I'm so, a little bit different as an artist. It's, you know, a lot of artists, I think, are drawn to that.
They're drawn
to the darker, sort of like David Bowie was, very drawn to the occult and to that. All I'm saying is you got to be careful with that stuff.
So a
little bit goes a long way, and too much of it can make you sick. It basically can make you sick, and that's what you got to stay away from. So I'm super conscious now of the stuff that I put into my mind.
It's a good choice. I don't think anyone would argue with that strategy as far as improving your quality of life. The next tip that I want to talk about that kind of inspired the idea for this episode, we were talking off air. You know, we talk about compartmentalizing these different categories and playing different roles in order to achieve an extraordinary life. And I was thinking about the dangers of letting these different areas bleed over into one another. What do you think about this idea?
I think there are positives and negatives to basically multitasking, letting these areas bleed over. For instance, you've heard me talk for years and years about the fact that every time I work out, I'm multitasking. I'm either listening to an audio program or I'm spending time in nature, or right. So you can let these areas of your life bleed over and support each other. But I feel like I draw hard lines when it comes to some things. Like, for instance, Missy and I have always stopped work at 5 o'clock. We just don't work at night like a lot of people do now. Now I got up early. I get up at 4:30, 5 o'clock. And well, I used to, I get up a little bit later now that we've moved to the islands. But we work our asses off, but we are very, very conscious about stopping at 5 o'clock. Why? Because the reason that we're working is for our quality of life. The reason that we work so hard is so that we can have an amazing life together. And if we're sacrificing that at 5 o'clock, then what's the friggin' point? So Miss and I have always had a nice, clear demarc point. We stop at 5. There are times when we're in the middle of a really serious project. There are exceptions to every rule, is what I'm saying. But generally, we want to make sure that we always keep in our mind the reason that we're working so hard is so that we can have a fantastic life. And if you sacrifice your fantastic life for your career, that makes no sense. A career is a means to an end. Your career should support your entire life and make your entire life better, not just your financial life, your entire life. So, I think compartmentalizing is super important. And then, well, look, the whole concept of the 12 lifebook categories, it's about compartmentalizing, or it's about getting clear on the most important areas of your life and seeking to master the most important areas of your life. And when it comes to your quality of life, you know, more than anything else, your quality of life depends on how you're doing in the other 11 lifebook categories. Having a high quality of life entails high levels of physical fitness. You know, if you're really compromised physiologically, that compromises your quality of life. A high quality of life entails experiencing quality emotions on a consistent basis, having the best possible relationships with the people that you love, building a fulfilling career that creates financial abundance so that you can do the things that you want to do.
It's a sum total. Yes,
it is.
Absolutely.
It really is a sum total. So for me, here's how I've always looked at the quality of life category. Number one, it starts with the 11 categories we explore in Lifebook and trying to do as well as I can in each of those categories. And then after that, there's three things that live specifically in the quality of life category. They are the experiences that you want to have in your life, like travel. That's our number one sort of experience category. Number two, the environments that you're surrounded by, your home that you spend the most time in. And number three, your possessions, your things, the quality of your, you know, the
your
art
stuff.
And the objects. And your stuff. If you like cars, it's a car. If you like your boats, that's a boat. So that's kind of how I've broken down the quality of life category in my own mind. And I love this category, Jordan. I have absolutely no sort of moral or ethical resistance like a lot of people do to being wealthy, to living in luxury, to creating as high a possible quality of life as I can in this world. Because I share, this makes me more powerful. This makes me happier. This makes me more energetic. This makes it so that I can do my life better because I'm enjoying my life more. You know, if everybody lived this way, we'd live in a much better world.
I think that's very freeing. And I think that people actually look up to that now. And I understand what you're saying about the kind of totality of the other 11 categories. And I guess what I was highlighting is the ability to shift focus between them. And your example was exactly right. That's like the classic example of you don't take your work home with you. That's the big bleed over that ruins so many people's quality of life, right? They just simply take their work home with them. Just that one hard stop creates so much breathing room, so much growth space. And I think there's a lot of examples of that. I think you can actually go the exact opposite direction. I think that you can, goof around too much. Take your home to work with you, if that makes sense. I think it's about being able to change hats and shift focus.
See if you agree with this, Jordan. I've always believed that leisure time is one of the most important indicators of true quality of life. If you don't control your time,
yeah,
you're out of control because time is life. So leisure time is incredibly important. And let me just say this about stopping at 5. The reason that that is so effective as a strategy. I mean, I feel like our career is more effective because of that strategy over the years than it would be if we kept
so
working.
Here's why.
Because you push as hard as you can. You're tired. You've done as good as you can. It's time to take a break. It's time to step away. Because you know what happens sometimes? I'm laying in bed at the end of a nice day. I worked my ass off all day. I had an amazing time with missing the kids starting at 5 o'clock. We had a beautiful dinner. Had an amazing time. And now I'm laying in bed and I'm feeling happy and fulfilled. And all of a sudden, that concept that had eluded me all day when I was trying to figure out that business deal, or I was trying to figure out that financial model, I was trying to figure, and I couldn't quite get it. But because I stepped away, I took a break, I got into a beautiful situation with my wife and kids. Now I'm laying in bed and the whole friggin' thing comes in right there.
100%.
Write it down and then I wake up and I work on it. That happens to me so much. And I think that happens to a lot of people who understand the value of you can only push so hard. And then you got to, let me give you an example. I've been trying to put together one of the biggest business deals of my life and it's been very difficult. It's a not necessarily complicated, but very sophisticated high level deal. And for the last 3 to 4 months, I have not known which direction to go. I've not known what to do. Now, if this would have been 10 years ago, Jordan, I would have pushed. I would have driven through that. Right. I'm a driver. If I come up against roadblocks, if I come up against obstacles, my basic MO for the last 30 years has been, I'm going to blow past this. I'm going to drive right
hammer
through it.
I'm
going to roll up my sleeves and hammer it and get this done. But I've changed when it comes to that. What I've done over the last 3 to 4 months is I'm like, you know what? I'm not getting this. The breakthrough isn't coming. I'm not seeing this. I'm just going to take my foot off the gas. Take my foot off the gas. 3 friggin' months of taking my foot off the gas, which is uncomfortable for me. That's not my MO. And then all of a sudden, one night, it came in one big package. The entire deal structure from beginning to end in one completely finished package because I was patient. I let it unfold on its own. This is a new thing for me. Right?
Yeah, you created space.
Exactly. And this is what I'm trying to say. I believe that leisure time is one of the most important indicators of quality of life and one of the most valuable tools you can use to create your quality of life. Look, if you do really well in your career and your financial life, and you actually have the benefit of having some leisure time, you can actually get some leisure time. That's when you can... Who said it? Henry David Thoreau said, only through leisure time can one cultivate the soul's estate.
Oh, absolutely.
Only through leisure time can one cultivate the soul's estate. So you can't think about the big things. You can't think about the profound things. If you're in the trenches and in the weeds, you need to carve out some time to just be with your family, just be in nature, to let things unfold. That's when the profound stuff comes in.
Absolutely, man. That's incredible. That ties right in with our next point too, because again, you know, spending your time doing what you want to do, your leisure time, cultivating that estate of the soul. It's about taking that action right now. There's something about putting yourself first, I guess you could say. But, you know, if we get tied up too much in other people's stuff and other obligations and all of this, we never get the time to cultivate that estate. So I think part of it is finding happiness and enjoyment now. This is something that Joel Wade talks about. It's a trap that some people fall into, which is, I'll be happy when I'm finally married. I'll be happy when I'm finally out of this marriage. I'll be happy when I'm rich. I'll be happy when I'm broke and done gambling away all this money. There's literally 1,000 iterations of it. And the trap to that is, if you'll be happy when, you're guaranteeing that you won't be happy now.
I agree.
A lot of the times when you get to that thing, you don't become happy, you know, just by nature of happiness. And what it's really about is working now in the moment to, you know, we've been over it before, cultivate your relationships, build your own health, work on projects that stimulate you and help others and contribute to the world and spend time with friends and family. These are all things that you do now, right now.
That's exactly so. Right. Jordan, let me just make a distinction though. So it's like deferred gratification, we know, is one of the absolute core principles of being a successful human being. Deferred gratification.
True.
However, I would suggest never defer happiness. Those are two separate things.
Oh, I love it.
Deferred gratification means, you know what? I just earned this money and I'm not going to spend this money right now. I'm going to save this money and I'm going to earn more. And eventually I'm going to be able to do the thing that I want to do. That's called deferred gratification. Deferred happiness would be, there's my little Julie out there playing with her wagon. And I could either go ahead and answer these 5 emails right now or go out and play with Julie and her wagon. I'm not deferring that happiness. I'm going to go ahead and spend the next 10 minutes with Julie instead of on these emails. That's called deferred happiness.
That's right.
And I mean, I just made this up on the spot. But to me, there is a distinction between deferred gratification, which is almost like a business decision. Deferred gratification, and by the way, do you know about that marshmallow experiment, that first grade marshmallow? Right, exactly. That's like a famous. So deferred gratification turns out to be one of the biggest indicators of success or non-success in any form of human endeavor. It's super important to be able to say, I have a bigger picture, so I'm not going to blow my wad right now. I'm going to wait to where I can really do what I want to do. That's like a very mature, very balanced, dialed in way of looking at the world. But Jordan, I don't think we should ever defer our happiness. I think we should grab our happiness at every moment that we can, any time we can, any place we can, with anybody that we can. 100%. That just is what seems right to me.
I agree with that. And I think that there's a lot of ways to look at that. But the way that you put it so universally, I think those are really wise words, man. That's absolutely right. That marshmallow experiment, actually, Dr. Joel Wade goes into that in depth on the Mastering Happiness podcast. So check that out, everybody, if you haven't heard of
it's
that.
It's awesome.
Really
it's
cool
awesome.
Experiment. Anyways, I do want to wrap it up. And this really ties in nicely to what we were talking about. One of the things that you are really, really good at and people admire you for is your ability to incorporate beauty into your surroundings, into your life. I think that there's something really powerful about aesthetic beauty, about natural beauty that obviously you understand and appreciate. Could you speak on that?
Yeah, I can, Jordan. And you know, it's interesting. My best friend, Pat Gintempo, once told me, he said, John, you know what your core value is? And I'm like, well, I got a lot of core values. Freedom is one of my core values. But, you know, I rattled off a few things and he said, yeah, but I know you. I've been around you for a long time. And I'm telling you, that your core value is beauty. That's the thing that you value the most. That's the thing that you are on this earth to create. And of course, Pat spent time in our homes and in our city penthouses and right. And so beauty is incredibly important to me. It's one of the more important values along with, I'll tell you some of the other values that are important to me: tranquility, serenity, peacefulness, sensuality, order, organization and efficiency, happiness, joy, and love, security, right? So basically, here's what I understand about these things and how they can affect your life in a profound way. And this comes down to environments. This comes down to the house that we live in, Jordan, the house that you grew up in, the houses that you grew up in, the penthouses in the city, the houses that we stayed at when we traveled the world. Our environments that we create, Missy and I, are extensions of us as people. Our environments, the environments Missy and I create to live in, we look at them as extensions of us as people, meaning they give material form, physical form, to the contents of our minds and our spirits, to our values. They're a physical reflection of our values, of our aesthetics, and of our personality. Mm. So, and the reason that our environments are so important to us is because we understand the feedback loop they create. The qualities that our environments radiate totally permeate our lives.
So true.
For instance, you know, I think about some people that I know, some of my relatives who live in a disorganized, hectic, stressful environment. Their lives are disorganized, stressful, and hectic.
100%.
Because that is what they are surrounded by. That's what they live in. Likewise, if you're surrounded every day by beauty, by tranquility, sensuality, your life will literally be more beautiful, tranquil, and sensual. That's how it works. So your environment should be in harmony with the person that you want to become. You want your environment to clearly project the mood, the values, the feelings that you want in your life on a continuous basis. So when Missy and I sat down to really design our dream home, and we're on the second iteration of that right now, we spent a lot of time defining the moods and the values that we wanted these environments to project and what would do that. For instance, if we want tranquility, serenity, and peacefulness, if we want a tranquil, serene, peaceful life, we need to be in a tranquil, serene, peaceful environment. And what creates that? What are the physical attributes of tranquility, serenity, and peacefulness, right? Well, relaxing music, the sight and the sound of water all over the place, living things, plants, flowers, a spa so that you can take a steam shower, take a jacuzzi, Japanese garden that melts away stress, fireplaces provide warmth and comfort, comfortable, beautiful textiles and furniture. We literally said we want our home to be tranquil, serene, and peaceful. And we listed all the things that create that, and then we built them into the home. Same thing with sensuality for our bedroom. Sensual music, fire, water, aroma. What makes us feel sensual and turned on? Well, we're going to build that into our bedroom.
I got to jump in here because I think that those are all good pieces of advice, but there's a few standouts to me. And I got to tell you, it's the three things. It's water, it's plants and nature, and it's fire. All of those things are natural, and those are the three heaviest hitters. The lighting is nice.
Can I add one? Because you just identified three of the four most important values that we built into our home. Water, fire, living things, meaning plants, and art. Art was the fourth.
Okay, yeah, that's that for sure. Definitely.
Jordan, literally every building that we've ever built since you've been alive, those have been the four. You nailed three of the four. Those are the most important channels because those handle so many different things, right?
I think that there's something primal going on there, man.
Exactly.
It has to be. The fire has to provide some sort of sense of security. It has to on some genetic level. I can tell you after doing the Coffee Health and Science podcast, and nature and plants have a host of phytochemicals that literally affect your physiology just by being around them. So that's definitely affecting
people.
You.
That are never around friggin' nature are a mess.
Oh, I couldn't have said it better. It's so true. And then the water, again, it has to be something primal about security, about having a water source, maybe something about running water. Everybody knows that's relaxing, but I think it's actually physiologically relaxing. So
I'll tell you, that's exactly right, Jordan. I'm not sure what the scientific principle at play is. All I know is that when you are surrounded by plants and fire, and the sound and the sight of water, you feel so friggin' good. And then you bring art, your own personal expression that really turns you on. The colors that you love, right? And oh my God, this is the way to create an environment that nurtures you and that cares for you and that increases the quality of your life to a huge level.
It absolutely is. And it's doable on a small scale. Like, you obviously did it to a degree that's legendary. Let's be honest. It's epic. But when I was looking for my townhome that I'm at right now, just renting a townhome, a fireplace was a must. It was part of my life vision for the townhome that I'm renting. And I got one. And I got the fireplace that I wanted. And Jordan, you can buy a little water feature for not very much money. You know what I mean?
In the movie Category 13, which I'm sure most Lifebook members have seen, but if you haven't seen that, I you can find the links in our Lifebook membership. We share strategies for doing all of this on a budget. When Missy and I travel the world and go to hotel rooms, we take our little temple with us.
Like a go bag. Most people have a zombie apocalypse go bag. You guys have a date night go bag.
No, but seriously, we take our music with us. We bring this up. You can do this on any budget. It's about consciousness, man.
That's exactly right. It's not going to be free, but it's going to be next to free, and it's going to completely change your quality of life.
100%.
Yeah, man. This was a great overview. I feel like we couldn't wrap this up without quickly talking about the 12-dot system, 12 sacred choices. I think that we talked about the categories adding up to a quality of life, but I also feel that these 12 sacred choices, for those who like to implement them and implement the 12-dot system, it's almost a hack, a shortcut, a guarantee that you have a good quality of life.
It is, man. It's where the rubber hits the road. The 12-dot system is, that's in the trenches, on the ground, every day, right? So look, if I have a great month, I can look back and see I did my 12-dot. At a high level. If I've had a crappy month, I can look back and see that I didn't. So if I follow my 12 dot, I'm going to get the green drinks and juices that I need to make my body feel good. I'm going to have done the workout. I'm going to have delighted my wife. I'm going to have deeply connected with my children. I'm going to have worked on my most important career project to create financial abundance. Like those little dots, if I'm getting my dots, I'm friggin' living my life right and moving in the right quality of life direction. And if I'm not getting my dots, I'm screwing up and I'm not as happy. And my quality of life is not for people like me. And I don't know, you know, I've noticed a difference between men and women when it comes to 12 dot. I feel like 12 dot is sort of a masculine process.
It's a masculine. You're right. You know who enlightened me to this was the last member of the month, Yika. She was talking about scheduling and obligate and these things being of a masculine energy nature. And I had never quite thought about it. And I instantly thought of you talking about this exact thing.
Well, that's right. But, you know, and I think depending on what you identify as your 12 sacred choices, one of them could be meditating every day. I mean, you could have very feminine things that you're tracking, but the concept of tracking, the concept of wrapping a structure around your daily behaviors is a masculine construct.
I would agree. I think so too.
Masculinity is about structure. So this is a masculine system. And just in our family, this system works better for the boys than for the girls. Like Justin, if he's doing his 12 dot, he's dialed in. If he's not, he's a mess. I'm the same way. Yeah. Missy doesn't do 12 dot and neither does Jade, but some women do. And some women love it and some men don't. So it's not, none of this stuff is ever 100% across the board.
It's an interesting observation though.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is this. If the 12-dot system works for you, meaning if you can identify the 12 small daily behaviors, they're going to turn you into the person that achieves the life that you have defined in your life book. If that system works for you, my God, there's nothing more effective that I've ever encountered. If it doesn't work for you, that and you want more of a vibey life, you want to really focus more on just mastering the 12 categories, that's fine too. But my God, for those of us for whom this system is really effective, I'm telling you, I think it's the most effective personal development strategy I've ever found, with the possible exception of accountability groups. It's just amazing.
I agree. I think you have to wrap it in the 12 categories though. And Lifebookers just have this huge, huge advantage. I don't want to end on a sour note, but I worry about the next generation not appreciating some of the concepts that we've talked about. And Lifebook gives me hope. I think that personal development, I've talked about, I've lamented before that it is a niche, but I feel it's growing. I feel like it's becoming more and more present in modern culture and pop culture. And I hope that continues. And I hope that these types of ideas get out to the next generation, because it's, like I said, you just have such a massive, massive leg up when it comes to an overall fulfilled, happy life and well, that life being achievable right now.
You're 100% right about that. I agree with you 100%. And here's the good news. Here's what I think the real glimmer of hope is. Our educational system has failed us utterly and completely. Yeah, our educational system as we know it is on its way out. It is broken and it's going to go away. Mind Valley's core focus is to completely change education. They're going up against college.
That's right.
Right? You know, we're going to launch Lifebook for Teens next year. It's an alternative to school. These are the most important areas of life to master. I think that we're going to see a huge shift in the focus of education over the next 10 years to personal development, meaning to, instead of studying igneous rocks and cumulus clouds, studying best practices and how to be a great human and live a great life. 100%. Understanding your health and fitness, understanding how important your relationship with other people are, understanding your emotional life and your intellectual life, learning a little bit in school or in whatever your educational platform is about how to balance a checkbook and how to pay your taxes and things they never teach you in school.
Yeah.
The entire 200-year pedigree of our educational system is profoundly inadequate to prepare students, to prepare humans for life in the 21st century. It's going to fall apart and it's going to be replaced by something better. And I'm hoping to God that personal development steps up and stakes a claim in that new areas. I'd feel good about that if I were you.
That's amazing, man. I love how you've carved out your thing. I love how you get fired up about this. And I love Vision gets really fired up about this, man.
He does.
I see a bright future because of this, and it does make me hopeful.
I'm going to leave you with one quote, okay?
Oh, I love it.
Quality of life is never an accident. It's always the result of high intention, sincere effort, intelligent direction, and skillful execution. It represents the wise choice among many, many choices. Good stuff, right?
I love it. Absolutely perfect. What a perfect way to end the episode. Thank you, man, for taking the time this month and every month. I love these podcasts.
Me too, man. So good to spend time with you. Lifebook members, we love you. We got some major improvements coming to the Lifebook membership. We're so excited we're going to be releasing a new members platform. We've got so many wonderful things coming. And this month, the month of November, we're going to be revealing a lot of what we've been working on. And just expect 2021 to be the best year of your life, because we're going to be there supporting you.
I love it. Absolutely love it. Thank you so much, Lifebook members who tuned in. I appreciate each and every one of you. This is Jordan River Butcher and John Butcher signing off, saying have an extraordinary day. We'll see you next time on the Lifebook Member Podcast.